Matt Lodi joins us, NEOSportsInsiders.com. He's the founder and he's a writer as well. Matt, how are you today, sir?
Hey, good. How are you doing?
Doing good. So the big topic for us today actually has nothing to do with a sports topic at all. It actually has to do with our own opinions, and it's we want to get your opinion on this as well. We kind of started the show talking about how the Cavs have been doing well lately, and same thing with the Indians. They've been playing fantastic. So the question begs is, when you are watching sports, when you're watching the Cavs, or in your case, the Steelers. Let's go with the Steelers for you.
Oh, I didn't know he was one of them.
He grew up in the Cleveland area, and he's a Steelers fan. He's one of those guys.
I don't know if we can book you anymore, Matt. This may be it.
Smart move.
homegrown Cleveland, and he's a Steelers fan. Anyways, so the question begs, when you turn on the Steelers on Sunday, or you turn on the Cavs tonight, do you expect them to win, or do you want them to win?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with who they're playing. I think a lot of it has to do with circumstances. More often than not, I expect, based on the quality of the team. But, you know, there are those times that you certainly hope that they're going to win based on, again, maybe there's a big player on the team injured. Maybe LeBron's not playing. Maybe if it's the Steelers, Ben Roethlisberger's not playing, something like that. And you just kind of hope they're going to win. But in most cases, yeah, I mean, I think you have to want to have that confidence that your team is good enough. So, there's certainly been lean years for all the teams that you root for. I think whether it's the Indians or Cavs or Browns or whoever, that you just kind of hope that they're going to win. And sometimes the more fun seasons are the ones that you're not expecting a lot out of a team. But, truthfully, when you have a team like the Cavs, or I think, now that we're starting the Indian season, I certainly think the Indians fall into this kind of mold where, they're so good and everybody seems to be picking them to win the American League or at the very least win the American League Central, that, yeah, you kind of expect them to win. I don't think there's any question about that.
You know, I think it all depends on the individual teams that you follow. Like, you as a Steelers fan expect when they take the field that they're going to win. For me, it's the Cavs. It's Ohio State football, based on what they've done and how much winning that they have done. In the back of your mind, you're realistic. You're like, they're not going to be perfect every year, but you expect that from them based on what they have done over the past few seasons.
Well, yeah, no doubt. And again, go back to the Cavs. I mean, obviously this is a team that, it's been kind of frustrating because there's certainly been nights, even in the last few weeks where, they were mired in that losing streak where they were losing games that I think a lot of people felt they should have won. And there's no question that, the Saturday game against Washington a week and a half ago was one game where I thought they were going to come out, they were going to be a little more fired up. Yeah, I know LeBron had the mask on there early in the game before he took it off and got kind of frustrated with it. But I truly thought that, after losing a couple of days before that, they had won the night before in Charlotte, that they were going to be back on track. And instead they came out and Bradley Beal and John Wall, two very good basketball players, kind of ran circles around them and they didn't play very well defensively. That's kind of frustrating. And again, it's sports and you just have to accept that. I think the most frustrating thing about sports is when you are the heavily favored team and you just kind of lay an egg, and again, that happens. I mean, that's why you play the game as you will. But just on the other side of that, there are times when you're the team that's not supposed to be in the game, not supposed to win, and you kind of pull off the upset. And of course, I think for Cleveland fans, you kind of go back to game 7 last year, the NBA finals, where the Cavaliers, clearly were the underdog in that game, playing in Golden State against a team that was going to be the greatest team ever. And they kind of laid on them and, obviously were able to win that game late. And I think that's why so many people will cherish that memory forever. I mean, obviously there's a million reasons why, but I think the fact that they were not supposed to win that game and they won that game is the reason why so many fans will always be so entrenched and engaged with that last year's Cavaliers team.
Matt, the last time that we had talked to you, we kind of referenced the panic button that a lot of Cleveland Cavaliers fans were hovering over at the moment. But after that game against Boston the other night, do you think, including yourself, are Cavs fans more at ease and realizing, oh yeah, this is still the Cleveland Cavaliers? Or is there still a little bit of a panic mode because of the horrible month of March that they had?
Well, I think that Boston game was a statement game. And I hate to say that because I hate that term, that statement game. I mean, every game should be a statement game. You always want to come out and play your best. But I do think that there was certainly a lot to play for during that game. And not only that, but it just looked like there was a different you know, kind of the old flip the switch type thing. And I must have saw that on Twitter about 40 times that night.
Right.
You know, in terms of, oh, you know, they're flipping the switch. Well, I don't know if I buy that they're flipping the switch. I just think that, you know, like we talked about, I think it was a week ago, you know, maybe now they're finally figuring some things out. We talked about defensively what they were doing. We talked about some of the things they were doing to try to generate more, even offensively. And it certainly just looks to me like they've got some things figured out. And even though defensively, I was watching some highlights of that Boston game earlier today, there were some moments in that Boston game that just fundamentally didn't look good to me. But at the same time, I think a lot of times hustle and just trying to get back on the ball a little bit more and just being a little more aggressive will do wonders for you. And, you know, oddly enough, I hate to say that, you know, maybe not having Tristan Thompson was a little bit more of a bigger factor than they thought, because, you know, they kind of made sure that they compensated for not having him, and it played off. It definitely paid off that night. And as I said earlier, I don't know about flipping the switch. I don't know if I buy that per se, but they look like a lot more focused team just the last couple of games, even though, you know, again, that's hard to look at it in a small microcosm of the season. But I think also, I mean, Cavaliers and the fans have to be thrilled after, you know, last night Boston lost again. So I think the Cavaliers are going to be on cruise control here for the next couple of days and hopefully be able to clinch this thing and clinch the one seed. And then I think at that point, everybody will take a deep breath as they get ready for the number 8 seed, whoever that might be.
Yeah, it's been pretty cool the last couple of days, Matt, whether it was Wednesday or tonight with both the Cavs and the Indians playing, and to watch them beat Boston the way they did and pretty much control that game wire to wire, then to flip over and see Lindor hit the grand slam after having that fielding error and put the team on his back. I think we really need to stop and appreciate these two teams and what they're doing right now.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, it's very difficult in a city to get, you know, all of your major league teams, whether it's, you know, in Boston per se with the Red Sox, Celtics, and Patriots, or, you know, New York with one of their myriad of teams to be all good at the same time. But I think you, like you said, you have to kind of respect and you kind of have to embrace the fact that, you know, a city like Cleveland, which has, again, been kind of mired in so much, you know, losing over the years, has two really, really good teams right now. And again, the Indians, as we keep saying, I think there's no question that they're going to be a very good baseball team this year. I think unless they get beset by a ton of injuries and a ton of players who do not perform at the level that they should, there's not much of a chance, in my opinion, of them being a bad baseball team by any means. I think that they should be one of the best teams in Major League Baseball. In just the first 3 days, we've seen how good they can be, especially, you know, when things are going their way. And again, you know, you don't want to have to come back every single night. They came back two of the three nights, but it wasn't a bad idea to get the fans going, you know, in a big way and get them some confidence. And they did that. I thought that they played very well in Texas. You know, again, they gave up some runs, you know, there's no doubt about it. But also, they were able to kind of overcome that. And I think that's a big deal. And winning in the ninth inning in baseball, it just builds confidence. And I think you saw that throughout the course of the 3 days down in Arlington. And the Cavaliers, again, I think that when you look at the fact that this team, you know, finally kind of put everything aside and just said, you know what, let's go out and have some fun again. They did that against Boston the other night. Let's hope against Atlanta tonight they can do the same thing. And, again, clinch this number one seed and hopefully everything will get back to kind of to where it should be to get this team ready for the postseason. Because, again, it's not going to be a cakewalk. We talked about that last week. I still think it's going to be a fight for this team, a little bit harder than it was a year ago.
Matt Lodi joins us. He is the writer and a founder of NEOSportsInsiders.com. Looking at the Indians, Matt, obviously 3-0 looks great. They had an off day yesterday. They play tonight. Regarding guys like Jason Kipnis and Lonnie Chisenhall, guys that have been here a long time, both struggling with injuries right now, do you believe that when these guys do come back from their injuries, they can only benefit the team? Or do you feel like, especially Lonnie Chisenhall, do you feel like he's not that old, but I do feel like in a way his time is ticking it doesn't seem like he's got it all there anymore. Kipnis is another story. But again, he's another guy who's been here for a very long time. So basically what I'm asking is, can both these guys contribute more, or will Lonnie's contribute be a little less than what we should expect?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Lonnie Chisenhall is still a guy that I think that they have plans for. I mean, the kid's only 28 years old. I mean, this isn't a guy who, you know, is 37 or 38 years old by any means. I mean, numbers last year weren't terrible.
No, they were good.
Two six
263. I mean, you know, and, you know, you look at the fact that, or I'm sorry, 286, rather, the career average of 263. And, you know, 8 homers, 57 runs batted in. I think he'll be still a big part of what this team wants to do, you know, as far as in the outfield. And if there's one position on this team where, you know, you've got players that can, you know, kind of be back and forth in the outfield or back and forth, period, it's in the outfield. I mean, you've got Austin Jackson. You've got Abraham Almonte, who I think is going to have a big year. I like what I've seen out of him early on. You've got, you know, obviously Michael Brantley coming back from the injury, and he's played in 2 games and looks okay. You know, you've got players out there, and I think that, you know, adding Lonnie to the mix along with guys like Tyler Naquin, I think it's going to be just fine. I think he's going to contribute. And as I said, I don't know if I'm ever going to think Lonnie Chisnall is going to be a 300 hitter and hit 30 home runs, but I think he could be a marginal player. I think he could be a player that's going to contribute and maybe come up with a couple of big hits here and there. He's going to have some work. He might be able to return as early as the opener, I think, on Tuesday. He's actually eligible to return off the DL on Sunday, and he's going to play a little bit in Columbus with the AAA club here, I think today or tomorrow, from what I've heard. So, you know, again, I think that long-term, this is a guy who is going to just be in the mix. As I said, he's not a superstar. He's not a guy who's ever going to hit 300. But I do think he's going to I do think he's going to definitely be in the mix.
You know, Matt, with that all said, the Indians are then forced to make a decision when Lonnie comes off the disabled list of what they do with the plethora of outfielders that they have. And as much as I agree with you about Almonte, I think he's motivated for the fact that he wasn't able to be on the playoff roster last year. He is the only outfielder left with an option. I wouldn't be surprised if he's the one sent to Columbus if they activate Chisenhall. I don't know what else they would do.
Well, I mean, Michael Martinez is always a guy that they've sent back and forth about 30 times. So I don't, you know, don't get too sure of that yet. I mean, there's always a quote unquote injury, you know, that comes up here and there where a player might just go on a quick 10-day DL just to make a roster spot. I think that they want to see, you know, especially after last year and the suspension and everything, I do believe that they want to see what Almonte can do, you know, with this team from kind of a long-term type situation. I really think that they feel like he's got an opportunity here in a full season without all this nonsense of a suspension and everything kind of hanging over his head of what he can do. And I think he's going to get a lot of playing time. I really do. So, you know, I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but I think there's probably a better chance of a player like a Michael Martinez, or as I said, somebody getting a phantom injury, if you will, going on the 10-day DL before you send Almonte down.
It would almost have to be that, you know, unexpected injury, because they haven't shown confidence in Diaz in the late innings. They've been putting Martinez in there either as a pinch runner or as a, you know, defensive substitution, and they may need him. So you kind of wonder, they've got to have some decisions to make here in the next few days.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing, though, because, again, you know, you how many times in the past have you looked at a situation and said, oh, you know, this is a clear-cut decision. We're going to send this guy down. We're going to release this guy. We're going to do this with this guy. I don't think there's any question that, you know, they've got a lot of good decisions to make. You know, I was talking about this as far as depth the other day. I mean, look at that bullpen right now. You know, Boone Logan, Brian Shaw, you know, Miller, Cody Allen, Dan Otero. I mean, somebody was saying that, oh, you know, what's going to happen if they burn out some of these guys? Well, that's why you have a deep bullpen. As I said before, that's a good situation to have, because you do want a situation where you can, you know, go to 1 or 2 or 4 or 5 guys late in the game instead of just the 1 or 2 guys. I mean, last year it was all about Shaw, Miller, and Allen. For this year, you know, you got Dan Otero in the mix. You got Boone Logan in the mix. You know, McAllister. I mean, there's guys in the bullpen that I think are very, very much – good, and that can obviously have a big impact on this team moving forward.
Matt Lodi joins us, NEOSportsInsiders.com. I noticed, switching gears real quick, Matt, that you had posted this article on your website only about an hour ago, I think. The article's headline says, "The Browns have eyes on Deshaun Watson at 12. Will he last that long?" Your thoughts on Deshaun Watson and what he could contribute to the Browns? Mark's making a stink face because he's not a fan.
I'm not a Watson fan.
But your thoughts on him, and will he be there at 12?
I mean, I've got some, you know, I'm a big believer in pedigree, and I do like what the guy's been able to bring to the table at Clemson. I think that, you know, I know Vince Young, he kind of reminds me in that mold, and we saw what Vince Young as a pro did. He just didn't really pan out. But I think when you look at it, you know, Watson's got some intangibles. And, you know, I mean, how many times are the Browns going to miss on this quarterback situation? You know, and I don't know if Deshaun is necessarily the answer per se, but I do think that there's a lot of intangibles there that makes him a viable option at 12. Obviously, Mitch Trubisky's another guy that, you know, I think that they've got their eyes on. But obviously the team, and it was quoted in this piece that I wrote, that have a lot of eyes on quarterbacks are the New York Jets. I mean, this is a club that, you know, kind of in the mold of the Browns, they need a quarterback. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick is no longer the answer. Geno Smith was a guy they took in the third round a couple of years ago. You know, he's not, or second round rather, he's not exactly the answer. I think they're going to go looking very hard at a quarterback with the number six spot, which means the Browns might be in this weird situation where they might have to get the leftover guy unless they themselves make a deal. So there's a lot of things that can happen there. Personally, though, I don't think I'd have a problem with them taking Watson or Trubisky. I think it's going to come down to who they like better, and I think that they're going to make sure they do their due diligence and make sure they look at both guys long and hard before they make that decision. But again, though, if you're the New York Jets and you like one of those guys better, you just may end up taking one of those guys, and that may throw a big, big monkey wrench in the Browns' game plan.
Real quick, Matt, we only got about 60 seconds left. Your thoughts on WrestleMania this past Sunday? I haven't talked to you since before it. What grade would you give it, and what were your thoughts on it?
I mean, I thought it was a good show. I'm sort of getting on board with the thought that this is way too long of a show. 7 hours is asking a lot out of your fan base to sit in a stadium or sit in an arena or even for fans to sit at home. I just think it was way too long of a show, and they need to find a way to get this thing down to back to 4, even 5 hours I would have taken. But 7 hours is just way too long. I mean, I thought the show itself was good. There was a lot of memorable moments. I enjoyed, obviously, the Undertaker. The final thing on the card was good. I thought Lesnar and Goldberg was what it was. I even thought the Cena thing, as hokey as it was good. You know, Shane and AJ was good. I think it's a solid B show. But
same.
Again, I think if you kind of put this thing a little bit better perspective and not having your fans sit there from 5 in the afternoon until midnight, you could do a lot of different things with it. So I'm kind of on board with the thought that maybe in the next couple of years you're going to see 2 days of WrestleMania, maybe 3 hours on Saturday and 3 hours on Sunday, because there's just so much on this card that you could kind of go over and over and over. I think you could make it almost a two-day event.
I agree with you. 1 day of WrestleMania, why not do two for a big wrestling fans like us? Matt Lodi, NEOSportsInsiders.com. Thanks for joining us, my man, and I'm sure we'll have you on again soon.
You got it, buddy.